Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society. Meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to consider your opinion any longer because the social contract is that important to a civil society and everybody has to sign it. I'm your friend and host, Dan the Worshipping Dionysus Man, sipping on science today. I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you have a good time too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We'll be talking about how to grow your penis so big it won't even fit in your pants anymore.
Oh my God, we need that.
I thought I was going to have to show myself out when you started talking about the social contract stuff, but I guess I can swallow my pride long enough to see this. tell me more.
All right. Okay, all right. As always, you can hear, I am joined here in the lounge by some fun and fascinating guests today. As always, Amber, my sister who loves woo-woo and thinks she's always right too. How are you doing today, Amber?
I am doing fantastic. It's a wonderful day. It's a little hot outside, but
glad to hear it. Glad to have you. We're also joined today by Kyle, the seaman who uses reason. Kyle, how are you doing today?
Oh man, that's a great.
That's a funny intro, considering what Dan's going to tell us at the end.
Oh no, you can't do that to me.
No. I mean, he's the seaman. Yeah. I assume that's S-E-A-M-E-N, but...
It's navel, sick woman. Why would your mind go there?
I don't know.
I was on a long, hard, black, cylindrical object with a bunch of other semen.
Yeah, folks at home, I'm sorry for Amber's dirty mind. I know you've come to expect more from
no,
us.
No, he's not.
We got a really fun and informative show for you today, brought to you by...
Wait, which part are we on?
Well, right. Welcome to Sexy Sex Talk, where we talk about nothing but sexy sex.
Stories from the deep.
We got a really fun and informative show for you today. It's brought to you by Aperture Science, because at the end of the day, there will be cake. We're going to take a quick look back at the Battle of the Eclipse, as well as Gladys Bentley, blues singer extraordinaire. We've got some hot science news, talk about supramolecular metallic foam and biohydrogen.
I love foam.
In bullshit and snake oil, we're going to be talking about the San Francisco Fed's new opinion piece on profiteering, as well as we'll touch on something called the Forer effect. But it came across today when I was looking on, I was reading about the Rocky Bullwinkle voice cast, and one of them had a brother who was a scientist who did a paper. I was like, oh my goodness.
That's fascinating.
Oh, the rabbit holes we fall down.
The lady who voiced Rocky the Squirrel and Natasha. Yeah.
Was she really a scientist from the Kremlin?
Her brother was a psychologist who did a famous study.
Oh, okay. Was she from was she really from Russia?
No, her brother, her brother.
That's really cool.
Of course, we're going to play fact check in time. Going to get that out of the way. And then we'll wrap things up with a feel good story.
Mm-hmm.
We do encourage everybody to reach out to halfcocktails@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a voice message or a text message at 443-499-8253. Maybe you want to just drop a comment over on our TikTok, Facebook, or Instagram, or over on all those. But for now, we're going to hop in the time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in a time machine.
Amber, to celebrate Pride Month, I heard you've got something to share with us about somebody. Tell us all about Gladys Bentley.
Okay, so before I start, I do have a little disclaimer that I pulled from learningforjustice.org, because we're going to be talking about historical figures and the impact that they've had in queer society. So I want to make sure that we start off with a little disclaimer. So I'm just going to read it exactly how they have it written, because it's so much better than I could have
said. I don't
know
if I like apologizing for things before ahead of time.
It's not an apology in any way. How about first, my friend?
I think all disclaimers are an apology ahead of time.
Well, some of them are a fuck you.
Oh.
That's true.
If I could talk, I would share it with you. Okay, so they say there's a difficulty in discussing queer historical figures. Mm-hmm. It can be tempting to place labels on people who, depending on their era and social norms at the time, may never have used those labels on themselves. Mm-hmm. This requires nuance and care. While it may be appropriate to discuss the queer themes in an artist's work and in an author's words, or to discuss known queer relationships and rebellions against gender norms, it's less appropriate to put modern labels on a person posthumously or to speculate beyond the evidence. So, with that said, I did a bit of research, and I hope I get it all right, but if I don't, I apologize now.
Okay.
So, Gladys Bentley. Gladys Bentley was once the richest Black woman in America. She existed in the early 20th century.
I said, no shit.
He was surprised.
What was that? Yeah.
Yeah,
she was pretty awesome. She was a blues singer and performer who is known for her signature white top hat, tuxedo and tails, and for singing raunchy songs with double entendres, while, quote, a liberally painted male sepians with effeminate voices and gestures performed behind her. So she was this very boisterous, flamboyant woman who really embraced her authenticity at a time when things were a little bit troubled. So if you remember from history in the 1920s, we have the Great Depression and we have Prohibition.
Oh, yeah.
And so Gladys Bentley.
And things were great for Black people.
Oh, right, right. Well, during this time, actually, in Harlem, they weren't as terrible as they have been in other parts of our history, but still not what they should be. So she arrived in Harlem around 1925-ish from Philadelphia. She then became a major performer during the Harlem Renaissance, which if you've never read about the Harlem Renaissance, it's amazing, and you should go do that today.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So from an early age, she wrote that she was attracted to women and that she felt more comfortable in men's clothing.
Who isn't and attracted to women?
She used this, right? I mean, there's some really hot ones out there.
I'm just saying, I get it. I understand, personally.
I get it, too. I get it, too. So, at a time that is described as surely as gay as it was Black, Miss Bentley emerged as a major player in the Harlem Renaissance scene. So at this time, just a little aside, a little history lesson, they had what were called rent parties, and I really think we should bring these back. And this is where she kind of got her start in this particular venue. So a rent party was a party that was thrown by often African Americans who lived in urban neighborhoods, and their rents were going up, and they were already pretty significant for the time. But as more people were moving into New York City, of course, landlords, just like today, see the opportunity and hike the rents. And so people were being priced out of their homes and needing to find creative ways to pay the rent. So one of the ways they did this were through rent parties. And they would send out an invite. They would have food such as like chitlins and pig's feet and hop and jam, potato salad. They would have music.
You can just say that. You just say food.
Soul food.
Soul food. There's a difference.
Okay.
They would bring in music, like drummers, pianists, sax players, and then singers like Fats Waller and Duke Ellington people's homes. Huh. Yeah, they would come to people's homes and play. So to get into the rent party, you had to pay a quarter. which in today's money would be $3.92. Doesn't sound like a lot.
$5 at the door.
To see a major performer.
Right, exactly. But keep in mind, at this time, like, especially African Americans, were only making maybe $3 a day max. So that was a bit of change. But their rents would range anywhere from like $12 or $13 a month in a really cheap area, up to even $60 a month, which would be like $627, $940 today. So a little rent history there.
It looks like she actually, at her peak, was successful enough to have a $300 a month apartment in Park Avenue. So get pretty far.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, pretty high up there.
She was very popular. She would take popular songs of the day and treat them to new lyrics, which were quite filthy and raunchy. And this really pushed the boundaries.
She's a Weird Al Yankovic.
The first and the best, I would say.
It's funny because the songs for this show are all public domain songs, so they're probably the same ones that I'm singing. Oh, with filthy words. Nothing would be finer than another girl's vagina in my mouth tonight.
I love it. I love it.
Sorry, continue.
Right. You're channeling that Gladys Bentley energy.
No editing, by the way, folks at home. There was no pause there. That was right out of the drunken brain of Dan.
Straight off the dome.
As it always is.
Hush.
Okay, so she was advertised as a male impersonator. Okay. And she was known for flirting with the women in her audience. Langston Hughes, who is a very popular writer in the Harlem Renaissance, he was a journalist. He's got lots of really great writings out there. He said that she was an amazing exhibition of musical energy, a large, dark, masculine lady whose feet pounded the floor while her fingers pounded the keyboard, a perfect piece of African sculpture, animated by her own rhythm. I just love that. Like, that gives me such a picture of this woman who's just powerful and knows who she is.
Yeah.
She sang at the Cotton Club. She sang at the iconic gay speakeasy, the Clam House. She was very popular. I know. I laughed when I read that too. I was like,
I've sang at the Clam House too.
Was it next door to the Blue Oyster?
What an appropriate name for a gay speakeasy. She was the subject of a lot of gossip. She told one gossip columnist that she got married, and the columnist asked her, well, who's the man? And she scoffed and said, man, it's a woman. Right. So the rumor was that she married a white woman in a civil ceremony.
How dare
she? But we don't really have any records that confirm that. I know. As the Harlem Renaissance wound down, she decided to move to California. And in doing so, she toned down her act a little bit. And honestly, that's the sad part for me of her story, is as time went on and society became more and more excluding of genderqueer people, she, knowing her audience, would tone down the way that she performed. The phobias in the 50s caused her to, again, reinvent herself as a more traditional Black woman performer.
Yeah, McCarthyism would be terrifying for her, I'm sure.
Exactly. And she relates that she felt like she existed in that shadow no man's land between the gender boundaries. Mm. And eventually she was kind of forced back into the closet a little bit and not able to perform as authentically herself as she had it when she began.
Yeah.
Which just breaks my heart, because she should be allowed to be who she is. She ended up passing away from pneumonia in 1960. She was waiting to be ordained as a minister in the Temple of the Love in Christ, which I thought was really interesting. And she was described as a gender outlaw who lived as authentically as she could in a complicated world.
That's putting it mildly.
Gladys Bentley. She's amazing. I love her.
Amber, thank you for sharing the story of Gladys Bentley with us here in Pride Month. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'll have another great one next week.
Real quick, because I promised it in my videos this week in social media, I promised it. I got to touch on the Battle of the Eclipse, the time machine. We're going to go farther back than 1920, all the way back to 585 BCE. Excuse me. This battle's also known as the Battle of Halys.
Ooh.
It was with the ancient Medes Empire, the Empire of Medes, which is in the Middle East. Their capital would have been in Iran. They were all the way up into Turkey. Ooh. They had a huge empire spanning far east, all and then to the west, Turkey. They were battling somebody called the Lydians. And this has been a 5-year war because this empire is like, we're going to expand. But these Lydians, which is actually one of the Greek city-states, they were like, no, fuck you. 5 years of war, and they are battling this day at this river. And in the middle of the battle, there's a complete solar eclipse while they're fighting. Like, it just starts getting darker and darker, and then boom,
eclipse. That must have been a little confusing.
And so everybody like just kind of looked around and was like, what do we do? Do we keep fighting?
I'd be running away in that time of day.
Right? Like, I'd be seeking cover. Yeah.
Fucking sun is going out. We need that.
The gods have swallowed the sun.
Who turned out the light?
You know, this had actually been predicted by the Greek philosopher Thales of Miletus. Now, these warriors didn't know that. And like the king of the Medes and the Lydians, they didn't know that. But this is Isaac Asimov actually called this eclipse the birth of science. Because Thales was able to take all the patterns and be like,
he was able to predict it.
There's going to be an eclipse because of these patterns that I've been noticing of how the sun and moon and stars are moving. So that's another reason why it's a significant eclipse. Now, there have been some scholarly debates about this because some people link it to a lunar eclipse instead of a solar one. Some scholars are thinking it's more likely this was a sneak attack at night when there was a full moon. And there was a lunar eclipse on the full moon, and that stopped the battle in its tracks. Regardless, the substance of the eclipse stopping the battle is very well documented, whether it's a solar or lunar eclipse, which, and there in 585 BCE, there was one of each, just in different times. So weird to me how we can have so much documented about the war, but scholars and historians will debate where in the year the battle happened. I don't have answers for that.
I'd be curious to see like more like their battle tactics and things, because it's not easy to have a full scale battle in the middle of the night like that. You know?
Well, if there's a very full moon.
Yeah, that is curious.
Right.
You could do a sneak attack.
Right, right.
Right. If you've ever been out on the full moon, it's bright.
Especially with no light pollution and everything. Yeah.
Exactly. The no light pollution's a big one.
Yeah, there's no zero, right? So they actually all stopped fighting, put down their weapons, and like, okay, let's calm down. Apparently the gods are very angry. And ended the war. They were able to negotiate a peace treaty that was brokered by a guy named Synesis of Cilicia and another guy named Labynetus of Babylon, who scholars believe is Nebuchadnezzar II. Of Babylon, the same guy.
Really?
Who's in the Bible. Yeah, he actually helped negotiate that peace treaty, and boom. And that's how celestial phenomenon can scare superstitious people into failing to achieve their goals.
Of genocide.
Well, damn, if we could just end wars that easily now.
Right. Why do you think China just landed a moon lander?
Right. Oh, they're taking away our eclipses.
They're studying the dark side to use its technology. To darken the moon.
Darken the moon. All right. Let's get this train moving and try and catch up here and do some quick news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two. It's time for some news.
Both of these science stories are up on the halfcocktails.com website. So you can find out more there. So, supramolecular metallic foam. These guys at Sichuan University in China and the Max Planck Institute have designed a new material that could really, really change things up in like aerospace and just general construction. Supramolecular metallic foam. It's never before seen combination of strength and light weight.
So it's like that aerogel stuff, but
but metal.
Right. Oh, no shit.
But actually metal.
Huh.
And
that's amazing.
And it's recyclable. It can break down if you with the right stuff, and then they can reshape it.
I like that.
They use what's called a core shell nanostructure approach, using these liquid metals and some alloys, and then they use sound to ultrasonically treat them while mixing it with acrylic acid, and those nanoparticles, they come together into this foam.
Wow.
That ends up with a load-bearing capacity they subjected it to these tests using a car, just a small car, unlike previous foams, like the tires will collapse, right? They were able to maintain 90% of the original thickness after 10 cycles of doing the foam in and foam out. Foam in, foam out.
Interesting.
And so this could be a new way to do tires even.
Amazing.
Right? Metal foam in your tires instead of air. Oh, got a nail. Whatever. Just maybe stronger.
Especially if it still has compression and like you don't have to. It's not like riding on like a wooden wheel.
Yeah.
They would have to be better than the run flat tires, though, because mom had those run flat tires on her van, and they were awful. They like replaced them all because they were so unreliable.
Yeah, they don't use those. Those were a gimmick. Those were a gimmick. They don't use those seriously.
I want like the lunar tires, the lunar rover tires. Those things look cool.
There you go. Seriously.
There you go. Okay, so big advancement in material science. These scientists are hoping to push
this
into being a standard building block of construction in the future. And on top of that,
that would be amazing.
We have a new process of biohydrogen.
Okay, explain more.
So famously out there, Toyota has been like, screw electric vehicles. Hydrogen vehicles are the future.
Yeah. And then didn't they reverse that, though? Didn't they be like, oh, we were wrong. We should probably do some electric vehicles, too. Or are they still doubling down on that?
Last I heard, I haven't been paying attention maybe as much as you have since Two Bulls went off the air. Most of the company news goes over my head. I don't know. We've already got hydrogen fuel stations like all over Europe and the world, right? Like they are here. This team, international team of a lot of Chinese scientists doing a lot of good science work. That's what happens when you give them money to do science. International team mainly out of China.
Astounding.
Built this biohydrogen. What it is it's a two-step process using fermentation. They use dark fermentation and photo fermentation. So it uses. I don't understand the full process of the dark fermentation, but it's other than it's fermenting in the dark, duh. Obviously, and in that process, it breaks down organic matter and into hydrogen. And then it leaves behind some substrates and like junk. And then using photo fermentation, when they add the light, it processes the junk and the substrates into more hydrogen.
Talk about efficient.
Precisely.
Holy cow.
So they found that, like, if you go to the coal gasification plant that they use to get hydrogen, it produces 1 ton of hydrogen and I want to say 16 to 18 tons of CO2.
Mm-hmm.
And through this system, it's producing 1 ton of hydrogen per 9.4 tons of CO2. I think it's 18 because I remember thinking that's about half.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just significantly cuts it down, and it uses lower energy. It takes less energy to do the fermentation method.
Right.
It's biohydrogen.
Huh.
Hydrogen produced through fermentation in life instead of electrolysis.
Yeah, I was just thinking that would be
cool.
Because what was the other method there? Weren't they like developing some algaes that would basically like produce that through its like photosynthesis methods?
I think we are talking about the same thing right now.
That's not the same.
I think that's
is that what it is?
I think that's what fermentation is.
A dark fermentation?
I think there's a plant in like Santan Valley that was doing something like that. I remember driving past it. I used to come visit you, or like a proposed site.
Let me ask my research assistant.
There you go.
So dark fermentation works through a bacteria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The paper doesn't mention algae.
That creates bio.
Yep. Like Amber said, bacteria.
Well,
fascinating stuff.
I mean, is algae a bacteria? I don't know.
I don't think it'd be classified as a bacteria. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bacteria is microscopic. So algae is, you can pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You can.
All right.
I'm not.
You can. Okay. All right. Let's move along. Let me see here. You know, before we talk about snake oil today, I'd like to take a moment to invite everyone to go take a look at halfcocktails.com/shop. I know I'm constantly thinking to myself, what shirt am I going to wear today? Should I put on a hat? Why is my fridge so barren from magnets? My walls are blank and there's no wall art that promotes science and stars and astronomy. If only there was a place to go where you could purchase these kinds of things and take the decision making off your shoulders. You've worked hard all day making decisions for everything. You don't need to waste your precious mental energy thinking what kind of sweatshirt do I need when it's cold. Just go on over to halfcocktails.com/shop and get one. It's that easy. It's so easy. Anyone can do it. Why not you?
Fill your wild curiosity with a spectacular science hoodie.
There you go. That's right. Hey.
And mugs. Always got to have a mug.
You guys know. Nice. You guys know what else is for sale? The finest snake oil.
Old snake oil on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, so I did a video and an article about this. I should probably pull up the article too. The San Francisco Fed came out a couple weeks ago with a paper outlining how when you take the aggregate data of the economy, it shows that things are right on track with the average of an economic recovery, and that profiteering isn't the main driver of inflation. It's supply chain issues and supply and demand. The demand being because the economy opened back up, demand surged, prices surged. which, by the way, if there's only one thing of toilet paper left on the shelf, the store isn't obligated to charge more. They just can because of the scarcity.
Yeah, let's keep that in mind for sure.
I've definitely had that discussion with many economics professors in my college days of supply and demand. Like, I get this curve, right? But we know it doesn't have to do that. Like, they could just be like, this is the last one, and we'll sell it to you for the same we sold it to the last 100,000 people.
Which is...
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, that's kind of what they do with utilities, right? Isn't that why they're done or ran the way they are, so that supposedly they can't overcharge you for energy prices?
Right. It's why a monopoly would be bad, is because it doesn't matter what the demand is.
But, you know, electricity is considered essential. Why isn't other food, like, need food to eat, right?
Why isn't food essential? That's a pretty good point. Why isn't food essential?
Food and housing is pretty essential. Yeah.
Yeah, housing is quite essential.
I think everybody has witnessed a homeless person suffering from the psychological effects of not having housing to be able to understand, like, holy shit,
absolutely,
housing's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sun cooks your brain.
Very.
It's hard to come back from that.
It's really true. Yeah. Especially here in Arizona. It's so brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Sun cooks your brain. Yeah, it does.
It really does.
Yeah. That's why
I I got a little salty when I was reading the news, because a lot of news outlets picked this up and ran with it and been like, no, we're fine. Record profits are not the issue. The issue is the supply chain. We had how many years to fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. Funny enough.
Yeah, we need to stop blaming it on supply when it's clearly not supply.
You get the free pass when all the prices and everything go up in the beginning, right? When the COVID first happened, everything got super scarce. You jack up the prices then because you're having a hard time getting them. But then as you start getting product again, customers have already proven they're willing to pay for this. So they have no incentive to lower it unless their competitors are. I think it's less about them raising prices and that they're just not lowering them, right?
Yeah, they're not. They see how much they can make off of us and are like, well, it's already overpriced. We'll just keep it there.
Well, that's that. And that's what they're trying to use, like the supply and demand curve to predict is how much are people willing to pay? Mm-hmm. It's not about how much people can afford. When you're on the business side of it, it has to be about greed to survive.
Yeah,
my business is competing with these other businesses. Absolutely. I have to be as greedy as fucking possible. Otherwise, I don't get to compete anymore. Unfortunately, the net effect of that does not help us long term. We're seeing cycles and cycles and cycles of that play out. And we're at this point where we're hitting unsustainability. The amount of money people on the bottom are making per day does not pay for a day's rent and food and healthcare, right? It doesn't. These jobs aren't there anymore. And we can't blame the people on the bottom.
Huh. No. You can, but you look like an ass.
You can.
Well, yes, they do, but...
Then they make a movie about you at Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Strangely enough, the Kansas City Fed put out a study in 2021 that was like, corporate markups were more than half of the contribution to inflation in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And when you crack open both those studies, the Fed analysis is looking at aggregate average data, and the Kansas City Fed is looking at the personal consumption expenditures index, which is an average of more detailed average of what we're actually buying. It's not the all of the sectors blended into one. To me that feels like a teacher saying nobody cheated on this spelling test. And then you ask the students, and some of the students were like, well, this group, they never came back from lunch. So the teacher gave them all zeros. And that group over there, they could see the board. They got all the right answers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the average ended up the same.
Well, that's the thing with data, is you can manipulate it to say
what you want,
what you want it to say, or reflect what you want it to reflect.
That's and
that's why you have to always check the sources.
And that's one of the reasons I was happy to have Kyle on the show today. He and I followed the Fed for a couple of years.
Oh, yes, we did.
along with mm-hmm. the economy, and they do a lot of. They're like the emotional kindergarten teachers to the economy. They're like, it doesn't matter if nuclear war is about to happen. They still have to keep things mm-hmm. in the room calm.
Right.
They can tell everybody in that classroom that yeah, there's some danger out there, but here's why we're okay. Right. That's their job.
They're soothsayers.
Their job isn't to be. They're soothsayers trying to manage our panic. They don't want a bunch of screaming kids, you know, crying, oh, we're going to die. Mm-hmm. I want to see my mom. They want everybody to be calm.
Well, the concept of money only works because everyone believes in it. You have to maintain that faith in it.
That's true. I was reading a statement here. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio was just talking about this in a recent committee
the
meeting.
The San Francisco Fed paper?
Not the Fed paper necessarily, but I mean, but profiteering and price gouging. And Senator says that the fact that prices and corporate profits are going up at the same time is no coincidence.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to be aware of that. And then the senator went on to also quote a CEO that was on an investor earnings call who said, consumers are tolerating frequent price increases well. No, we really are not tolerating these price increases well.
Yeah.
Like, we need to start having rent parties to pay our fucking rent. Hello.
My wife gets annoyed because there are cars that will park in front of our house in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I just keep pointing out, I'm like, no, our neighbors have the equivalent of three families living in their house. That's why these cars are here. I'm not going to yell at them. Like,
right.
I don't think they're doing this
absolutely.
By choice.
No.
They're not happy. Trust me, they're not happy about
they
it either.
They definitely aren't. No, they aren't. As someone who has lived with family on occasion,
yeah.
They really aren't happy about it. Yeah, it's really disgusting that, CEOs are, posting record salaries and we're struggling to buy milk and eggs. Like, it's just ridiculous.
I was just saying, from the quick scan I did of the article that summarized the paper, it really just sounded like it was a rebuttal to Biden basically going out and saying that corporate greeds are causing the pain in there. This is the response to that, basically trying to say, No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Of course it's not. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's provide some cover for the profiteering.
Right.
It's unsustainable, and that's my main critique. I absolutely understand businesses have to compete, and I absolutely understand you work hard, you should get more meritocracy. But the current way we're going is gonna crash. It's unsustainable. You just can't keep it going.
Right.
Sorry, you can't. It's just not long term. Something has to change.
It'll correct itself.
Likely be spectacular if we let it do it on its own.
Yeah, right.
it'll correct itself eventually.
Right. Well, a recent article in the Washington Post did say that retailers like Target, Walmart, and Aldi are starting to realize that people can't afford to, shop and eat.
So they're getting rid of all of the self-checkout lanes because the shrinkage has become such an issue now. Too many people are stealing.
because we can't buy it. But they're starting to kind of roll back some of their prices. Yeah. So let's hope
they continue.
Let's
give the average American a little credit. They're also bad cashiers. I know I am.
Yeah. Any mistakes I've made have been self-inflicted. Yeah.
I'm just a bad cashier and I forgot to fucking scan this thing in my cart. Whoops.
Well, you know what? They didn't train us, so they get what they paid for.
That's what I'm saying. Shadow labor. Anyway, let's move on real quick. I wanted to touch on the Forer effect. The Bertram R. Forer, whose sister was the voice of Rocket J. Squirrel in Rocky and Bullwinkle. And...
Yes.
And the evil vampire lady in DuckTales. Well, I forget her name. Anyway.
Love DuckTales.
Yeah. Yeah. She worked in the industry that long. Anyway, her brother was a psychologist. He gave his students a personality test, which and told them, like, this is going to give everybody individual, unique results about your personality.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
And then... After they turn in the tests, he gives each student back. He goes, okay, let me assess it. Like, here you go. Here's your personality description, unique just to you. And every student received the exact same description, which was broad general statements like, you have a great need for other people to like and admire you. You have a tendency to be critical of yourself.
You've just proved astrology.
Have a great deal.
Hey now.
Yes.
Hey
yes. Now. Then he asks students, rate the accuracy of these descriptions on a scale of 0 to 5. 5 is the most accurate. The average rating given by the students was about 4.26 out of 5, indicating everybody found the generic descriptions to be highly accurate. And this is exactly how astrology works.
Astrology
100% how astrology works. It is 100% how astrology works.
It's how anything works. Anything. If you as a teacher, if you tell someone, okay, you're gonna take this test and like this is what it's gonna do, then of course when they take the test and get the results, they're going to believe that it did what you told them to do.
Amber, if I took a personality test that someone told me it worked and they said, you are conscientious and pay attention to all the details, I know that test is full of shit. Because I have to work hard.
But Dan, it won't be written like that. It'll be written like you can pay attention to details when the situation warrants it.
Well, here's the thing. The woo-woo here.
I know.
Let me chime in.
Yeah, go ahead. You're wrong.
No,
I'm sorry.
I
thought we signed a contract.
Watch it, boy. I still take you down.
Shit, you do know where the bodies are buried. Continue.
As someone who has taken a lot of these kinds of tests, not just because of the woo-woo, but I'm super... interested in psychology as well and how the brain works. There are absolutely tests that when I take them, I'm like, oh, hell no, that's not me. Like, no, that's not mm-hmm. me. This is mm-hmm. not right. But there are some that I take and I'm like, oh my God, that is me. Or it'll say something about how you were like as a child versus now. And and there are accurate evaluations. It's not to say they all are accurate, but that's why you have to do your
research
and do some thinking about it.
But anything that's coming to you for free, like in the newspaper, is likely not to be accurate. Anything that requires you to answer 10 or 15 questions on a website is not going to give you your personality. It's going to give you whatever you're feeling that day.
You really do. Right.
So,
you know, and when I was in college, I took the Myers-Briggs, but I took mm-hmm. the full one, not the little ones that they put in, you know, the newspaper. But those aren't intended to give you a picture of who you are. They're intended to intrigue you enough so you pay right. for the full price one.
Yeah.
And some are reputable and some aren't, okay. Which is why you have to be really careful.
I see. See what she did, Kyle, was she shifted this off of astrology onto Myers-Briggs.
Uh-huh. Smart.
Myers-Briggs is a totally separate discussion, Amber.
Well, no, I mean, I will go right back to astrology if you want. It's just you. Hey, you guys brought up Myers-Briggs, not me.
Oh, you did. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Look, that's We'll talk about that in another episode. We're already running long. I just want to put the bow on this. If it's a Myers-Briggs or whatever, to avoid falling prey to the astrology trick, look for specificity, details that are that have specific information, not broad generalizations. Question the validity. Ask yourself if the statements you're reading could apply to many people, not just you. Wait, Kyle's different personality than me. Could this apply to both of us?
Right.
Look for evidence. Favor methods and practices backed by scientific evidence and empirical research over those that rely on anecdotal claims.
I love taking the test.
Like astrology.
I love taking those tests, but I love answering it the way I truly feel. And then I go back and do it and answer complete opposite and then look to see if the answer I get back is still pertaining to me or not. Yeah. You'll find a lot of times they do.
Interesting.
Both of them are just as valid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, I will go out on a limb and say astrology, if twins are born in the middle of the night and one's born on one day and one's born on the next, and it happens to be that day when the sun signs change, all of a sudden they're going to have different astrologies for their whole life. But we know twins the identical twins have very, very similar personalities.
They do, but there are still very different. I have taught several sets of identical twins, and I will tell you that they might look identical and they might have some similarities in their personalities, but at their core, they're very unique.
Amber, I just dropped in the chat a link for you for the next episode you guys do, so you have some ammo to back up your side.
Oh, wow. Okay, all right. Let's move on.
I like Kyle. Can we have him back again?
We'll see how much he wants to come back after we play a game of fact-checking time.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact-checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact-checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call Fact Checkin' Time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fact Checkin' Time, the news show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. Kyle, you're in the hot seat today. You are playing for Poncho Cat, co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts. And whether you win or lose decides whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner.
Oh, no.
All right.
No, you can't put that on me. You cannot put that on me. Not Poncho, dude. Poncho is my boy.
This is your first time.
It's on you, man.
Yeah, Dan, be gentle.
Oh, God.
Be gentle. It's his first time.
He's got the same 50-50 chance for every question as everybody else. Okay. I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news this week or social media, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. They might be an article, could be a social media post, might be an interview quote, might be a tweet, but only some of them were fact-checked.
Okay.
All right. Kyle, are you ready to begin?
No, but we'll do it anyway.
Okay, good. Either Florida cops forced a naked woman out of her home on two separate occasions while serving warrants. Or a Mexican lawmaker stripped off his clothes while talking to Mexican Congress to prove his point.
Oh, my God.
Which of those news stories was fact-checked?
I think I remember the Florida woman one, actually. I'm going to go with the second one. Because I don't know that you need to fact check anything that comes out of Florida. If you get a Florida man story, it's good enough.
I love your reasoning. And that is correct.
That is a great reason.
All right.
PolitiFact fact checked. While nearly naked, a member of Mexico's Congress said, "You are ashamed to see me naked, but you are not ashamed to see your people in the streets naked."
So was it factual?
It was actually... It was rated mostly false.
Okay, so
the photo's real, but no evidence the quote is authentic.
Yeah. So he really did take his clothes off.
Yeah, Yeah. And then the woman is suing the sheriff for those warrants and being forced out because they came in serving the warrant and she was naked in her house. And they were like, get outside. We're serving the warrant. It's I'm naked. And they're like, get out.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah.
And it happened twice.
Can I
just say it? It's weird that they focus so much on the quote in that second one that they fact checked and less on the fact that he was naked in Parliament. Yeah.
And
that's the part that I wanted
talking.
To verify. This is mostly true to me.
There'll be a link to that in the episode description so you can read that fact check yourself. All right. Either.
Awesome.
Either. College students not having enough sex is why they're protesting Israel right now, according to one college professor. Was that fact-checked? Old-timey prostitutes used brothel candles to time their sex sessions.
Oh, God.
Ooh.
That second one sounds like it would be fact-checked, but I feel like the first one is the one that should be the answer. I'm going to go number one.
Oh, Kyle, you should have gone with your guts.
I should have. What was the second one?
Yeah.
I think I might have actually seen that headline, too. What does Pacho need to...
One more right.
You're one and one. Yeah. So
I was close.
We got one more shot. NYU professor Scott Galloway said college campuses are increasingly becoming reminiscent of Nazi Germany because kids aren't having enough sex.
It's because you have to ask everybody for permission these days.
I'm more worried that this professor is that invested in the students' sex lives. Like, that's a little creepy.
Like 20 years ago, he got laid all the time, and now he's like, they're not putting out.
Right. And now he's not getting laid, so he's like, well, they must not be having any sex because they ain't having it with me.
Was he a consultant on Animal House? Grades are up, but behavior's terrible.
Okay, so the sex scandals was fact-checked. It was found to be unproven. While there are old-timey candles that would only burn for like 7 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes, there's no evidence that they would specifically have been used for that reason. But I think
they couldn't find an employee handbook at the brothels.
Okay, all right, Kyle. Last chance.
Come on, Pancho. I'll send you food if I have to.
You can do it.
Either the Dave Matthews Band tour bus once dumped 800 pounds of shit on a tourist boat in Chicago. Or the North Korean government has a program to fly balloons of shit over the border to dump on South
Korea. They actually do. I did watch that. As a, it's a response to.
But was it fact checked?
Oh, no. Wow. So if I had
That's
to go.
The question isn't, is it true? The question is, was it fact checked?
He tricks us that way.
I still want to go with number one. I feel like that one deserves a fact check. First one.
You got it. Pancho gets wet food tonight.
I just thought the other one was too close. Much reporting. There's too much reporting on that one.
Pancho!
I need at the end of the episode, after you roll the credits, I want to hear Pancho's audio of him eating his food.
Oh, yeah. We need to start adding that in.
Oh, no, we're 5 hours away from making wet food. Thank you very much. I'm not creating a monster that makes for wet food in the middle of the day.
That's what happened to our cats.
So there was the Dave Matthews Band. Their bus driver actually did plead guilty in 2005 to dumping waste in the Chicago River.
Yeah, which album was that they did?
But
that's awful.
All the little shits go marching.
It's just so disgusting.
And as Kyle rightfully pointed out, North Korea does have a program to drop trash and feces on South Korea using balloons.
It's actually to counter the South Korean propaganda they drop, saying, "No, your life's better over here. You should do more like us."
That's a natural response to goodness. That.
Yeah.
Life's better over here. You're lying.
It will be better when you get rid of all your shit.
So the real question is there an opportunity for capitalism to profit from this?
I mean, apparently there's a Dave Matthews Band member who's in, who's looking for some. I hear he's always looking for more.
Okay. All right. Let's wrap things up with something that feels good. Not getting shit on.
We need to, please.
Thought that was the good story.
Oh, man.
A goal for a sip. Maybe even a hit. And join us for
This is, this is a story on halfcocktails.com, breaking news story by yours truly. I did not read about this. I found the scientific paper in a journal myself. Diabetic wounds. Are you guys familiar with how diabetic wounds are worse? Like people with diabetes, they get a wound.
A little bit.
So,
but explain for the audience.
So diabetics, like our dear brother, Amber, have poor blood circulation because diabetes narrows and hardens blood vessels. So they don't have as good a blood flow. It damages nerves when you get high blood sugar levels. It damages nerves. And then so you get less sensation in your hands and feet, which means small injuries can go unnoticed. You don't even feel them. And then allows them to grow. Diabetes messes with the immune system. Makes it harder for the body to fight off infections because the immune system is weakened because of the fluctuating blood sugar levels and the improper hormones. High blood sugar also, it just messes with the white blood cells, right? Doesn't allow them to flourish. And then people with diabetes often get chronic inflammation because of all of these things.
This isn't making me feel good, Dan.
Do you have diabetes?
No, but
we're not there yet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We're not at the feel good yet.
Oh, okay.
It's always darkest just before dawn.
All right, fair enough.
Right?
Yes.
So, and as anybody with inflammation knows, that saps your immune system as well.
Yeah.
Oh, it zaps everything.
So wounds linger and are harder to treat.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a team of researchers have developed lipid nanoparticles. These nanoparticles that are trisulfide derived fat nanoparticles, right? And it responds to the oxygen and makes it so harmful shit that accumulates on these wounds. They don't stick and accumulate, right? It fights the accumulation with a reactive oxygen. They call it reactive oxygen species reduction, and then these nanoparticles neutralize that process. They also at the same time deliver a protein to the wound to fight off inflammation and trigger the immune response.
That should be applicable to anybody even without diabetes, shouldn't it?
It should. But they're specifically right now. This paper is focused on diabetic patients. But you're right. That same science should be able to be broadened, right?
Yeah, burn patients.
Easy. Unlike traditional treatments that require repeated applications, they just need to put the nanoparticles on once.
Right.
Wow.
That's it.
Mm, the robots are taking our doctor's jobs,
that's
too.
That's amazing.
That's supposed to be feel good.
They're taking our jobs. I know, right?
Drive.
I know. So, as you pointed out, Kyle, like as they research this, we're going to get more and more broad applications of it.
Yeah.
But right now, even though people with diabetes, like they have to worry a little bit less. And when I was putting together the post for the website, you know, I try and get images to go along with the stories. Do not search diabetic wounds.
No.
all, let me tell you that this is a needed thing.
They're
it will
very
help
scary.
A lot of people with a lot of disgusting fucking wounds. And no, I didn't put any of them on the website.
Yeah,
the
bad.
Website, I put a picture of what nanoparticles look like.
There you go. That's
so search at your own risk.
It's a feel-good story that'll make you nauseous.
Right?
No, I love that, though. There are so many applications for that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just thinking, if they can continue developing it, potentially they could fix heart problems. They could fix problems with your lungs. Like, there's so many things that they could do with these nanoparticles.
The main application I see with that is just the infection fighting. If it's making infections less likely, like that's some of the main components with like burn victims and other things like that. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Surgery too.
Well, and I know, like in my case, my son's heart was damaged by an infection. So, potentially maybe it could have, have application there. That's
Goodbye,
really
man.
Amazing. It's really good news. I definitely feel good now.
All right. But all good things got to come to an end, even the feel goods and the episode. Before we sign off, I'd like to thank Aperture Science. Sadly, the cake is a lie. The cake is a lie. Sorry, everybody.
Poncho ate it.
Looks like we don't... he would. This guy follows me around like a dog.
It's like my cat.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Looks like, Amber, I'm sorry, we don't have time left to talk about how to grow your penis so big it won't even fit in your pants anymore. I'm sorry. We went too long.
Dan, I need that information.
I know.
How am I going to grow my penis now?
You have to do it the old-fashioned way and think of naked women. Great minds, Dan. We say that at the same time.
I mean, if you insist, I will go do some research and some pictures, see what happens.
I'm sorry, Amber. It's been a loquacious episode. Sorry, folks out there. That's on me. We couldn't get to that. I do need, before we go, to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and The Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Kyle, any final words, thoughts, or goodbye? You know what, Kyle, I did you a disservice. Yeah. I got to put this at the beginning. Folks, you can find Kyle over at Vonta Trading. Kyle, what's their web address?
Band of Traders. We have for the podcast, bandoftraderspodcast.com. You can find us there. Vonta Trading, we partner with them. We run a combined Discord with the free side that you should be able to find links at the website there. And then just lots of fun podcast stuff. Less fun.
Yeah, so if you're
a little less fun, a little more.
less penises.
It's hard to do that without Dan. Dan's the only one who could pull those off.
I'm the one who pull all the dicks.
Yeah, double entendre.
Dan is really good at those dick jokes. I miss it. Band of Traders podcast.com.
Yeah, check them out. A lot of really awesome, knowledgeable people over there. If you're into trading or you're just interested, go check that out. Amber, any final thoughts before we go?
Awesome. Yes, have a wonderful queer month.
What is blessed?
Or
start
queer,
with the day.
Wonderful month?
Wonderful queer month? How about a month of queer?
Yeah.
Queerly, a queerly wonderful month of pride.
All right. Take care, folks. Have a wonderful day. If you had a good time with us, you know what to do. Tell someone that needs to hear us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com. We are on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Threads. Of course, you can find us over on Patreon. We'll have all those links in the episode description. Thanks for stopping by. Now, go out and be well.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation, we're just leaving you half-cocked, half-cocked, half-cocked. We had a good time talking today, but even best times eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, we're just leaving half-cocked.